Imagine this. On the days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, every fall, every year, the people make their peace with anyone they have wronged or slighted or injured in any way in the past 12 months. The task is not to patch things up, reach a compromise, smooth things over, or sweep mistakes and uneasy memories under the rug. The task is not to feel better. The task is ownership. The goal is truth for its own redemptive sake. I did this. I said this to you. It was wrong. I neglected this. I botched this. I betrayed you thusly. I demeaned you, whether you ever knew it or not. This is the truth in which both of us are living. I ask you to forgive me. Imagine how many deep breaths you would need to take. Imagine how many doors you'd have to knock on, how many phone calls you'd have to make, how many letters, how many lunches and coffees, how many awkward moments with your children and your parents and with strangers, that cashier to whom you spoke so sharply. Awkward is irrelevant. The task is not about comfort. It is about truth, about wholeness and holiness, restoration. Imagine this. Someone has been preparing all year to speak with you, to write to you, to ask you a hard question. Perhaps in some way not quite conscious, you've known this, and you've been preparing too. Finally, you answer the door or the phone or open the letter with shaky hands, and there it is, what you thought you'd been longing for but really dreaded. Someone is asking your forgiveness. The task is not about comfort. It is not about any of that. It is about truth. Awkward is irrelevant. You get to choose now. You have to choose whether and how you will participate in restoration. Abandon the pleasant piety that claims knee-jerk forgiveness as the unquestioned moral course. You get to choose which way will be right in this case, between you as persons and with all your gods. What response will make the world whole? Imagine. Something yearns in us to come round right. Something creaky, rusty, heavy, almost calcified within us tries, in spite of us and all our fears and self-deceptions, to turn and turn and creak and turn again and come round a little truer. Something in us stretches toward conversion. Imagine healing, holy, from within. Words of Reverend Victoria Safford. What response will make the world whole? Reverend Safford asks. Someone calls you, or writes you, or Facebook messages you to say they're sorry. They want forgiveness. What do you do? How do you respond? What do you say? This past week, our Jewish neighbors and siblings in faith, and some of us here, celebrated Rosh Hashanah and soon will observe Yom Kippur. These holy days are meant to commemorate the new year and create a space for atonement of sins and wrongdoing. Atonement is not a word we use often in Unitarian Universalism. In fact, we don't use the words sin or forgiveness much either, but we are wise to learn from traditions that do, since they might teach us something about the value of asking for and granting forgiveness and the ways that it can transform us and our relationships. Rosh Hashanah, the celebration of the Jewish New Year, is a celebration of beginning again, together in the spirit of joy and love. It is a holiday to celebrate the sweetness of the new year and new beginnings. Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, is a day-long fast that presents the opportunity to reflect on the ways we've failed one another and ourselves in the past year. The day ends with a feast and a time of beginning again in love. These holy days and the days of awe in between offer an annual opportunity to admit wrongdoing to others and to ask and grant forgiveness. They also offer an opportunity to admit wrongdoing to oneself, to reflect on how to become our best selves, because sometimes we make mistakes or don't follow through on the promises we make ourselves. These are opportunities for self-forgiveness, for change, for action to live into our individual values. These holy days are a communal response to the brokenness we feel and the regret for harming others and ourselves. There is always something to learn about how we respond to the hope for forgiveness. There is always value in reflecting on how those things we choose to do make the world more whole or contribute to its brokenness. Traditionally, long ago, for Yom Kippur, a goat would be brought to the temple. Then the high priest would symbolically place the sins of the people on the goat by placing his hand on the goat's head. And the goat would be sent out into the wilderness, carrying the sins of the people with him. This is the origin of the word scapegoating. The word scapegoat has evolved to mean the one who carries the blame, but it started as the one who carries the burden of others' sins and wrongdoings. And it is a burden to carry those broken relationships and mistakes and grudges around with us. As a culture, we lack a systemic way to deal with these realities. We participate in scapegoating all the time by referring to things like systemic racism and oppression as issues of the past, or blaming the victims of such oppressions for their problems. The list goes on and on. As individuals, we hold on to grudges and that unhealthy baggage, or we push it off onto other people, and we're stubborn. We get into a pattern of thinking that the grudge is worth holding on to, that it somehow serves us to have this grudge to hold over someone. This can lead to stress, migraines, physical illness, a whole host of other issues, not to mention it damages our relationships with each other and ourselves. Wouldn't it be great if we could sit with one another and say, "I'm sorry, and I forgive you"? Wouldn't it be great if we could take on that task that Reverend Safford calls us to, which is not smoothing things over or even feeling better, but the task of ownership, owning the ways we have harmed each other, intentionally or not. I did this. I am sorry. Too often, these conversations are left undone. We get in our own way. Dr. Ira Byock, author of the book The Four Things That Matter Most, shares some of the wisdom he's gained over the years. He writes that the four things that matter most in our lives are this. Are you ready? The four things that matter most are saying, "Please forgive me. I forgive you. Thank you. I love you." Byock acknowledges that these four statements seem obvious to say, but he also acknowledges that we simply do not say them enough. As a minister, I spend time with people who are dying or facing life-changing illnesses, and in the moments I've spent with families near the end of life, I encourage them to say these things to each other. Because in those last moments, what matters most is the love, the relationship, the center, that deep peace. And I say to you now, don't wait to say and do these things. All too often, these opportunities for forgiveness are missed. We get hung up on our pride and our stubbornness. We don't want to seem weak or fragile, so we hold on. We don't say these things we need to say. Please forgive me. I forgive you. Thank you. I love you. And sometimes things are not so neatly finished and wrapped in a bow. Most of the time, we are not given an apology after we have been harmed, and that makes forgiving all the harder to do. It can feel uneven and unfair that I was wronged and I have to be the one to let you off the hook. But the act of forgiving another person for a wrongdoing is the act of removing that burden from our own back. We begin again in love. We open the possibility that the world will be made more whole. By unburdening ourselves of that load, we open ourselves to the possibility of healing. A colleague of mine, Reverend Kim Crawford Harvey, tells this story about healing. In October 1995, there was a wildfire that engulfed over 12,000 acres and 48 homes in West Marin, California. People were forced out of their homes into shelters or neighboring towns. Buildings and entire neighborhoods were destroyed. Many were left homeless and without shelter as a result. Neighbors took in those who were left homeless, and volunteer firefighters worked 30-hour shifts to ensure the safety of the town. Finally, the ashes settled, the fire was out, that sense of loss set in. And then the cause of the fire was found. Four teenage boys, 14 and 15 years old, were camping illegally in an unauthorized area on Mount Vision one night. They came to turn themselves in. A local newspaper published a letter written by the firefighter first on the scene. He wrote that the boys had carefully tried to put out the fire with lots of water and a lot of waiting time. He described with detail the ways the boys carefully and diligently put out the fire. But the fire had made the earth so hot that it reignited and grew, and when the boys awoke, there was a huge flame that had encompassed their campsite. It was traveling down the mountain toward the towns. A mistake that turned tragic. A mistake anyone could have made, but resulted in terrifying consequences. In the weeks following the fire, the townspeople gathered to thank the firefighters for their work and to celebrate the sense of gratitude they had for the community that rallied together in support and caring. The mayor stood up and made his remarks. He acknowledged the amazing sense of community. And then he said that four members of that community were the ones whose mistakes had caused the horrible events. Those four people were not with them that day. He went on to say that, in fact, he'd heard that at least two of the boys' families felt they would need to move away from the town. The families feared that they would never be forgiven, and their families would forever live in the shame of that mistake. He suggested to those gathered that they must do everything in their power to let those families know they should stay. The applause from the crowd was unanimous. Two people whose homes had been destroyed by the fire approached the mayor, thanked him, and asked how they could help the boys and their families. As we know, often, this is not how the story ends. The townspeople could have turned their backs on their neighbors, holding on to the anger and the frustration with a stupid mistake turned tragic, but they chose to turn toward their neighbors, to start anew, to forgive, and to heal. They chose to save the future of four young boys and their families. They chose to save their community. They began again in love. They chose wholeness. So may we begin again in love. May we have the courage to take ownership of our wrongdoings and to ask for forgiveness. Let us seek to unburden ourselves from the grudges we carry, and let us remove others' burdens by honestly and humbly offering amends. May we forgive ourselves and each other. As we go forth from this place, let us remember the power of the four things that matter most to say to the people we love. Please forgive me. I forgive you. Thank you. I love you. May we hear these words with open hearts and open minds. So may it be. Amen. Blessed be.